the thing that excites me about this is the difference between Monday and Wednesday and Friday as people get more confidence and figure things out and learn to explore on their own.
They start to learn. I can raise my hand now. I know how to mute, whatever it is. And I feel comfortable speaking. You know, those are all good things.
This is Marion. I got an invite. There is a Friday night audio described movie.
Okay, so that's really from South Carolina.
Trying to figure out how they ended up by getting an audio described movie called Elvis.
Steve Cook sent it to us. He was our guest speaker on Monday.
But is there any way that we in Rochester can go to a certain place to get the audio described movie for Elvis? Because we'd like to do that.
Well, you probably would have to watch it on the Friday night when they're presenting it there.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Is that on Paramount? It was on one of the streaming services. Other than that, you either could go to a theater that might have it described and if it's still playing and get one of those headsets.
We have once a month or so, we have an event and he does audio described movies for us.
Well, I do know that Steve Cook is very open. If you have any questions, you could always reach out to him.
I think I have hearing loss. I could have swore it just said Elvis has left the meeting, but.
What is that keystroke? Remember we were talking about the keystroke in Jaws to
I found it too.
It's all Windows S.
Did you know that if you have salt in a salt shaker and pepper in a pepper shaker, which one would be the heaviest?
Would be the salt.
Salt. Salt. Correct, Mundo. So you don't have to have a whole amount of salt versus pepper, but the salt will always be heavier. So that's an easy way, instead of feeling the holes or wondering if there's a S or a P on it or anything like that, just or sniffing it and sneezing or something, you just pick up a salt shaker and it's heavier.
I was speaking to somebody on the call, and she's a traveler. She likes to go to see her grandkids all over, and she was not aware of the bulk seating that you can get for a blind person on a plane. You know, you're entitled to that, and if it's available, what we do is we always fly United anywhere. We make our arrangements, and that Larry, my husband, gets seats for us, and then I immediately call and say, we just booked this flight, and I use my Mileage Plus number. You don't have to worry about the code for the specific flight. And I said, I need to be moved to the bulkhead seats. And if you do it in that pattern, it always works, unless there's no bulkhead seat on that flight. And it's for you and an attendant, and there's no fee for that. So just wanted to share that.
So Janie, why do you like sitting in the bulkhead seat? And I'll tell you why I don't.
Okay, I like sitting there because I love to stretch my legs without getting up and bothering people. And I can stretch my legs fully straight out and march and stand, and there's a lot of room there. And I like to get in and out of the plane as quickly as possible. I get claustrophobic otherwise if I get on too soon. I like the air to be on my face. So I like to get in and out, do that very quickly if I'm in the bulkhead seat. Now, tell me why you don't like to do that.
I don't like it because I have to put things up in the overhead bin because you don't have space. I mean, I like to have my knitting and I just sit back there and knit. Well,
they let me leave my case on the ground under my feet. Every time I travel, I can leave my case with me. It has my book player in it. It's got my headset, my food, and all that is right there. I never have to put it up on the top.
Well, sometimes I've had to put it up on the top. And so I just figured, you know what? I don't care where I sit.
Yeah, that's fine. I can appreciate that. Yeah. And there's pros and cons for everything, right?
It's choice. It should be our choice.
Go ahead, Eleanor.
I flew west from Riverside, California to Georgia. And they had a special thing where they asked you, are you low vision, extreme low vision, or no vision? And they put me right behind first class. And they got me on the plane first. When the plane landed, they got me on the plane first.
Right.
So I don't know if all the airlines have it. I don't even know what it was called. Actually, my son, I don't know how he did it. You know, he told me.
Well, if you make your flight arrangements, you can just say you want the bulkhead because you're visually impaired or whatever. The only negative with it is they like to put you in a wheelchair. And I don't
Oh, that's just bugged the daylights out of me lately.
That's why I don't like asking for these special seats, because it's hard to have it both ways. If you think that you are entitled to whatever you think you're entitled to, and it really doesn't have anything to do with seeing, like reading print or something, it really has nothing to do with sight, I think it confuses people. How do they know what you need and what you don't need? You've asked for a special seat, so they want to make it as easy as they can so you don't have to walk as far. And they think
that's not necessarily the reason why you get that seat. You get that seat not necessarily.
Well, I know it may not be for you. I'm sure that's true.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying.
I think it works with anything. For instance, pre-boarding. I always say no thank you to pre-boarding because I don't know what it is about my blindness that should give me that privilege when other people are very anxious to get on board and they don't get that.
And for me, that's not a privilege. If they force me to get on first, I would never get on first. I want to get on last. We're the last people in the chute every time because I don't like being in a plane any longer than I need to be. I'm not scared of it. I just don't need to be in that environment. So I like to be on the plane and off the plane as quickly as possible. That's just me. And then the other thing on this same topic, kind of, is the handicap sticker. You know, we get the non-driver's license in New Jersey. They give you a handicap sticker, which I never take. I can walk. My eyes don't work, but I can walk. Give that to somebody that can't walk.
But what is there about blindness that gets you the seat?
According to the airlines, this is something they have. So they give it to people.
They?
It's not just for people with seeing eye dogs. It's for blind people. And they look at it as a safety issue because I can get on and off. I have my cane, you know, it might get into somebody's way or whatever. So they look at it as a safety issue, which may bother some people. Like you want to sit in the emergency door area and you're blind. Sometimes they tell you you can't sit there.
They'll always tell you that. I don't know why they have that rule pertaining to blind people. People make decisions about that. So that's why we discuss these things and right. We don't all have to come to the same thing.
No, when it works, that's fine. And it's a personal preference sort of thing, I think.
Well, but all people want different help. You know, that's what we got by the advocacy of the NFB in the 70s to make sure that we could have our canes with us and our animals. And if you don't want it or need that, then you don't have to use that. But and it's a difference of whether you're traveling with someone or you're all by yourself. And I get on a plane early just because I want to make sure I'm going to get assistance to get there. And so I live with that. Especially I go to Boston Logan. I don't know how many times I keep moving the planes around and stuff. But so it's just personal preference.
Absolutely.
This is Marion again. We had a vision loss support group meeting today. One of the group brought up a subject which I'd like to discuss. When she got on, I think it's like a van. When she got on, the driver said to her, "You're not blind. Sign this piece of paper." She said, "I am blind." And she says, "Oh, I was just teasing you."
What?
How would you handle that? I personally would have said to her, "You know, you're a very rude person." Another suggestion was obviously call her supervisor. That to me is just rude.
My solution would be I would report that to the supervisor because you don't know what they're saying to other people. I mean, I could address it myself and say, "Well, I don't know, were you trying to be funny?" Which I might try to be kind, crude to be kind, and say, "Well, you know, some people might not find humor in that and might actually be offended."
That's a good answer. That's a good answer.
This is Jean Park, and we are dealing with some of that because we're just a new retirement community on a university campus. And part of it is to empower the individual who is just learning that they have a vision problem and are trying to get comfortable with that themselves, let alone admitting it to the public. And so when they're met with that, they are totally floored. Whereas someone like myself, who's people still don't believe I'm blind because I have retinitis pigmentosa, I saw central vision for 70 years. So I follow everybody's voice. And, you know, I don't look blind, as they say. Well, you don't sound blind. You don't look blind. You kind of have to just say, "Well, I wish I could see that." It's one of those things. I think you have to be your own advocate. I was going to tell you all, just fly Alaska Airlines. You don't have that problem. They see me come in with a white cane. They come back and they say, "I see you have the white cane. We have you marked as I do mark it on when I book my flight as visually impaired, low vision, or blind." And you just check one. You don't have to check which one. It's just they're all together. And they come back and say, "We want to make sure you're safe. If we have to get out in emergency, stay seated and we will come and get you." And I look at them and I say, unless my husband is dead, I'm going to hold on to his butt and follow him out of here." And they go, "I think I would do the same." They're very respectful of whatever help you want. And the other thing that just slays my husband is we're ready to exit the airplane and they have the wheelchairs, as you're saying, lined up with your name written across it.
Oh,
and
wow.
I said, "If I were traveling alone and am blind, how the heck would they? But they'd pick up on the white cane, I'm sure. But anyway, Jerry just looks at it and he says, no, obviously we're fine. She's, you know, we don't need that. And they'll go, oh, okay. And we purposefully ask the question later, are we depriving this person of a tip or who's paying them? And she says, no, the airlines is paying them. Do not feel bad for saying no, thank you. You're not obligated to take the wheelchair just because it's presented to you.
Yeah, I think the wheelchairs sometimes are more of like a legal safeguard, maybe for them. They don't know. Some blind persons do have mobility issues. They have different arguments. They'll say, well, it's easier to travel single file with the wheelchair. And I remember once I said, well, if you insist on using that chair, I'll throw my bag in it and all right, I'll hold the handle behind. We'll walk this chair over here.
And Michael, on that, yes, at least Alaska Airlines says, you know, our obligation is for passenger safety, and they want us to get on early, but I'm not swinging the cane up and down the aisle. I mean, I really don't anyway. I do know the pencil hold. That's why they want us on, but they do not insist on it. And as far as one time I did end up, I was traveling alone and the guy came with a wheelchair and saw me and said, hello, I'm so-and-so. I'm here because you are visually impaired. I've got the wheelchair. I can get you to your next flight because it was a close connection. I'd rather walk. And he says, well, it's quite a ways and we need to get there quickly. I says, I can walk as fast as you can. And I held on to this muscle-bound 20-year-old and I thought, well, I may have spoken a little too fast here. I think if you explain to them what your needs are, I've found them to be very accommodating.
I think or hope it's better now. There's more sensitivity training where they understand that yeah, some folks may want it and others do not. And
has anybody else experienced going through TSA? And this was right after TSA kind of started up. And they still didn't know how to get me through security by either giving me their cane or holding my hand to get through. They said straight ahead, no to the left, no. So I got on the other side. And then they had an inexperienced TSA officer who then said, well, you can just stand right there. And so I took two steps forward and I went into a glass wall. Straight nose first. I didn't have my cane, and I thought she knew what she was saying. And my husband was outside the other side of security, came barging through to get me, breaching security. Anyway, we ended up with supervisors and TSA and airlines people and everybody there. They made sure we were all safe. Since that time, you know, as far as sensitivity training, boy, have we never had a problem since. They have learned how to get blind people through security and safely through.
This is Shelley. The more frequently you fly or travel and the more secure you get about stuff, you get used to explaining things and describing it. And if you do frequent an airline or a city that you leave and come from and that kind of thing often, they do get pretty familiar with you because there's been times I've had good success with that. Then there's other times where there's been lots of space between when I travel and they get pretty different, less educated, I guess.
This is Ada. I fly back and forth to Puerto Rico a lot. I have found that even though I have trouble with certain airlines with their computer systems and their routing systems, that the personnel are amazing. They are so helpful. They are so kind. They ask you what you want. And they always allow me. I don't necessarily register as a handicapped person because I know where I'm coming. It's not a long walk. I always ask for permission to board early because it does take me longer to get settled and get the cane in place and get the luggage up on top and all that stuff. People are wonderful. One time I got off a plane and there was somebody holding up the sign with my name on it with the wheelchair. And I actually did see it. And I said, you know, if I were completely blind, I would never know that. But by and large, they're intelligent and helpful and kind. And what I usually do is I ask them, how far are we from the exit or wherever it is I have to go next? And if it's a really long walk and I'm 81 years old and I have leg problems sometimes too, I will say, oh, yes, I would love a wheelchair. And they do it with grace and kindness and helpfulness. And I love it. And if they say, no, it's right around the corner, it's fine. I don't need the wheelchair. And they go on to the next person. But I too have found that they must be doing a lot of training with these people because they are, I have never had one who was not superior in their attention.
Yes, and I've learned if you do board early, make sure you articulate the city you're going to, because I was put on the wrong plane once and I was paying attention to the discussion of other people and realized it.
That's another thing I do is I always check when I get to the gate to make sure I'm in the right place.
Bernie has a hand raised. I just want to put my two cents in for Amtrak. I live in Richmond, Virginia, and other than my Christmas trip, which was canceled due to the weather, I actually love Amtrak. I can be to New York City in 6 hours. I can be to Atlanta in about 8 hours. I can be to Florida in about 10 hours. They're supposed to be putting a lot of money into Amtrak. I'm all for Amtrak.
Is that fully accessible? And I looked at the iPhone app, and I remember I was looking, we're going to New Orleans for the convention last year, and it had a thing like you try to choose your destination, and it showed you every single city that they served instead of just the ones that that particular train would go once you chose your train. So, but someone said maybe they've improved it.
It has improved. It's not fully accessible, but, you know, it's one of those things, man. You want to see the tape, we got to work with
them. Well, none of them are. But, I mean, some of the airlines are the worst, actually.
They're getting better a little bit at the time. And my wife and I actually did take the train to New Orleans, and we had a blast. You just don't get that on the airlines. We met a blind lady, and she didn't even know about the convention. She was moving back to Louisiana. Long story short, she ended up coming to the convention and joining the NFB, and now she's going to rehabilitation down there in Louisiana. So, you know, we use it kind of as an opportunity. So we deal with the inconvenience. Sometimes it's inconvenient and so forth, but it's a lot cheaper and it fits within our budget. We love Amtrak and we're hoping that it improves in the future. And, you know, we're trying to help them improve.
And I just want to say amen to everything that this gentleman just finished saying about Amtrak. It's great. The people on Amtrak are super nice.
For those times that we have to bow down and use the bus, I just learned that there's a service called Megabus, and they've partnered with a company called Miller Transportation, which is actually a really good company if you have to do buses, and they have Miller running there under Miller Trailways. But I guess they've merged, so it's going to offer new options to cities. But the thing with the Megabus is they don't have regular terminals or anything. You like meet literally on a middle of a street, on a street corner. But the one time I did use it, it was cool because I did put on there that I was blind, and that driver called me up by name. It was Michael. That was nice because, like I said, you're not in a terminal. You're out in a street sidewalk. It could be raining. You know, there could be a ton of people. Everyone's rushing to get on board. Just something to keep in mind that they've added some other routes at megabus.com as one other. Again, it's more affordable. You know, those are double-decker. I don't know. Just another travel option for folks.
I've used Megabus because I live in Philadelphia and I go to New York. It's all the things you said except that you're dealing with the traffic. So I like Amtrak better for that. And the thing about Amtrak is that the trains use a lot less energy, are much better for the environment than buses, cars, or airplanes are the worst, actually.
Well, I will try that. Let's acknowledge Ursula has her hand raised.
It's Ursula. I take Amtrak to D.C. all the time to visit my son, and I always travel by myself, and they have red caps that are very, very helpful, and you only need to get there about a half an hour before the train comes. So I love Amtrak. It's great. The seats are comfortable, and it's just, it's really great. I like it better than an airline. But I travel by plane a lot, too, and I like that, too.
This is Marion. I got a story about Rochester. Okay, I got on the plane, and it took me, I think, to Chicago. And I got off of the plane. I was doing my first trip to Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. They took me to, you know, I got to the gate, got on the plane, got off the plane, went down, got my luggage, got into a taxi and said, please take me to the Mayo Clinic in downtown. And he said, there is no Mayo Clinic in downtown. I said, yes, there is. I know for a fact there is. He said, in Rochester, New York? And I said, I'm in Rochester, New York. I'm supposed to be in Rochester, Minnesota. You got to be careful when you get to the gate to make sure when they say Rochester, Minnesota, not Rochester, New York.
That's a bad day.
Well, it was worse when I got to the person behind the counter. She couldn't understand how a blind person could possibly travel alone. And I said, well, that's the way it is, lady. I had to spend the night in a leaky room and pick up the plane at 4 o'clock in the morning the next day in order to get over to Mayo. I will not make that mistake again. When I get to the gate, I'm going to ask him exactly where is this plane going.
This is Jean. I would have a curiosity among all of the newly blinded people or newer to low vision than I. You know, I've had 50 years of knowing this would happen. There are many people in my building, and I'm chair of the eye support group here. Between 10 and 20% of the people have some sort of vision issue. Give me ideas on how we encourage people to embrace their condition enough to address it, enough to take action, to learn to live with it, not assuming that the next doctor's appointment will give them the next miracle.
Curtis, you have some thoughts on that?
I do. For the first time in my life, I moved into a 55-plus community about 4 years ago. I made it my mission to get hooked up with the, quote, low-vision, unquote, group within my community. Now, you realize my community, it's a huge, like a sub-city, sub-city, metropolitan-type area. You circle the community, it takes you 2.5 miles to go around. So they have a low-vision group, and the low-vision group consists mostly of people who are new to losing vision. When I was young, arrogant, and blind, I used to go around and say, well, you know, you got to just learn these skills and learn Braille and da-da-da-da-da-da and all is good, right? That's what I used to say. I don't say that anymore. Now that I'm almost 69, I think that those of us who've been blind all of our lives, sometimes, well, a lot of the times, actually, to be honest, we don't realize that for people who are burdened with the gift of sight, we don't realize that if you spent your whole life with really good vision or, you know, moderately good vision and you've used your vision for a long time, that when the vision diminishes significantly to the point where you have to change stuff, the transition is at best moderately depressing and at worst extremely challenging because to learn how to think and receive information in different ways is a lot of work. I hope that my behavior toward the low vision group is better than it might have been, say, 20, 30, 40 years ago. But I come in with information. Now, this is what I do. And I will try to temper that information with the recognition that for a lot of these people, all they do want is to have a better way of seeing the thing that they can't see now. I think if we don't recognize the frustration and depression that can, I don't say it always happens, but it can happen for people who have suddenly become, in their minds, quite dependent on other people. If we act as if we don't understand it or don't recognize it, the problem comes up that then they won't listen to you if you have information to offer that you think might be helpful. So I acknowledge publicly every time when I give them information, I'll say, you know, you realize that I didn't lose anything because I've been blind pretty much my entire life. I haven't had to worry about giving up driving or giving up reading or not getting access to the news or using a computer. I do all of those things. But I want you to all to understand that I understand that for you who are in this room today, that what I'm about to tell you might result in a lot of work for you. And your choices are pretty simple. You either do some of the work with help from your friends, neighbors, and sometimes from me, if I'm available and nearby, or you keep getting frustrated because, number one, your daughter didn't show up today to help you fix your technology problem, or number two, you want to write a check to somebody, but you can't see the checkbook well enough to do this. And while it's easy for me, and I tell them this, while it's easy for me to say, well, I know how to write checks, or I know how to, you know, I have strategies to get my print mail read and all this kind of stuff, that's not what a lot of them want to hear at the beginning. Now, it took me 3 years, right, to get to the point where I am. But now when I give them information, say, about talking books or NFB Newsline or alternative ways of doing stuff, I always temper that by saying, I understand that maybe a lot of you don't know how to do this. But I'm telling you that this is what's on the other side if you can just get through it. You know, it's not easy. Some of you may not want to do it. That's okay. You're still a human being and you still, you know, people have these questions about, well, I get so tired of having to ask people for help. And I would say, look, when you ask for help, who's in charge? Is it you or is it them? Because asking for help and being in charge of how the help is provided does not diminish your independence. What it does do is help you to recognize that you need to be in charge and that you need to control how much or how little help you actually get. And that's what I run into, is that I have found only one person in my complex who has been blind long enough that they've adjusted to it. Everybody else, this is all new, this is all challenging, and they're struggling. And I do think we have to recognize that and then say, but there's hope, there's possibilities, there's things that you can do that if we work together, we can help you get some of those. That's where I'm at on this.
This is Shelley. You know, for people that are really new at all this, it's a type of grieving. And you have to kind of go into it with, they're going to have different stages of the way they feel about things. What I'm hearing you say too is you need to let them talk and express themselves the other side of it is they don't need to sit there for too long because then they get too depressed and downcast. But giving them the idea that they are really in control by the questions they ask, build that rapport so they will let you say what you need to say eventually.
I am a low vision person right now. And in 2017, I was able to take care of my mother. She passed away then. And I had enough vision to take care of her. And then in 2018, I had some more deaths in my family. And then I had to undergo a surgery and I had a bleed and I was blinded for about 6 months. Kind of came out of that with some vision. And now what I receive is a pupil dilator that dilates my pupils so I can see beyond the lens. In my state, they offer a lot of help. So at one time, I was getting 12 hours a day help. And then COVID happened. Looking back on it, I think it wasn't good because it just made me so dependent. And I got to the place where people were doing everything for me, you know. And so now I'm getting to the place where I'm trying to be independent. And it's just this year that I found out about Hadley and the NFB. I mean, just this year. And we do have a sight center. It's nonprofit. We have blind and visual services. And I received cane teaching like 6 years ago. But I do want to say it is kind of intimidating to hear you guys that have dealt with being blind for years and then how well you get along. Because I know when my sight start getting diminished, I felt like my life was over. Somehow, like last year, I had a funny friend that kind of encouraged me and made me kind of get out of that. But it is rather intimidating. You know, I want to get there and I want to be independent. I was a nurse and they told us that when somebody is depressed, you don't go in joyful. It's quite intimidating to hear how you guys travel and cook and sew. I was just telling my daughter last night, well, there's somebody that knows how to sew and they cook and they travel and everything. And to me, it feels like I have to get over that hump. When am I going to get there where I feel totally confident? When I had sight and I was using my cane, but I know in my teaching, when she was telling me about the cane, I kind of blew it off. Close your eyes and what do you mean close my eyes? You know, I can see. I mean, I remember some things, but, you know, when you get with people and they're going places, they, you know, you try to keep up with them and you don't have a time to use your cane skills because you're trying to keep up with them. But I just feel like it's this big hump that I have to get over to be independent and to feel independent, you know. And so I took it upon myself. I said, well, I'm going to get a trainer. So I hired a trainer and I've been going to the gym. I sat in the what a lazy boy, and I just sit in the chair. And the girl from the Blind and Visual Services taught me how to use YouTube, and she opened up, and I listened to the discussion groups, and I talked to people. I am just now, this year, coming out of this depression, like sitting down, not doing anything, and I still feel like, and everybody's telling me I've come a long way, and I have, but still I feel like, you know, am I ever going to get to the point where you guys are?
This is Judy. All of us started somewhere. We didn't just arrive knowing all this stuff. You don't have to worry or apologize or anything for not being there now, because if you were, we wouldn't get to have a class because we'd all know it all. And that's not the way it works for anybody, even those of us who are doing things that you think we did by magic. There's no magic to it. There's hard work. There's making mistakes. And someday you'll look back and say, I wonder why I didn't learn that a long time ago. But you will, because you're here. And if you weren't here, you know, you couldn't hear all this. So it's going to happen for you too. I don't know when, but there's going to be a day that you're going to be passing all this on to other people who are coming in the future.